Please raise your hands. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Please empower me that I may do this katha with the least amount of mistakes. Will you bless me in this connection? If you bless me, say, Gauranga. All right, very good. So this chapter that Kamlesh picked is entitled Instructions for a Civilized Human Beings. We learn from the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that although there are 8,400,000 species of life, only 400,000 are human. And the number of civilized human beings is even less. Civilized human beings means they follow the rules and regulations of religious scriptures. Most people give lip service saying, I am this religion, I'm this club, but they don't really seriously practice. So a real civilized human being lives his or her life according to the instructions of the scriptures. So this seventh canto, the entire seventh canto, is a conversation between Narada Muni and Maharaj Yudhisthira. The event was the Rajasuya sacrifice performed by Yudhisthira. When Krishna was invited by Yudhisthira to come, Yudhisthira's message was, I'm doing this Rajasuya Yajna because I want to show the world that you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But when the invitation came, there was also a representative of some kings who had been imprisoned by Jarasandha. I think there was about 28 kings. They were imprisoned. And one of them, a representative, came and requested Krishna, you please come and deliver us. So there was a problem. Two things Krishna was being asked to do. So Krishna asked for the advice of his great devotee, Uddhava. Uddhava was a disciple of Brihaspati. So he had great intelligence. Narada Muni was the one who informed Krishna about the Rajasuya sacrifice to be performed by Yudhisthira and the representative of these kings. So Krishna asked Uddhava, what is your opinion? And Uddhava, being very intelligent, said, until Jarasandha is defeated, Yudhisthira cannot do the Rajasuya sacrifice. Because the Rajasuya sacrifice means that Yudhisthira is saying, I am king of all the lands. So first we have to take care of Jarasandha. Then we can do Rajasuya sacrifice. And that's exactly what they did. Krishna, Bhim, Arjuna, they went to Jarasandha in disguise as brahmanas. And Jarasandha was very favorable to brahmanas. So when they came in disguise, the three of them in disguise as brahmanas came there to beg charity, because brahmins have that right to go to a householder, especially a king, and beg charity. But as they were talking, Jarasandha noticed that these were very funny looking brahmins. They had big, strong, buff arms. Brahmins are usually meek. They're not these weightlifter types. So these brahmins had strong arms, nicely built bodies, and different marks which indicated these were not really brahmins. So after some discussion, Krishna said, yes, Here is Arjuna. Here is your avowed enemy, Bhima. And here I am, your arch rival, Krishna. Krishna had fought Jarasandha 18 times. 17 times, defeated his whole army, left Jarasandha wagging his tail back home. The 18th time, Krishna displayed his pastime as Ranachor, pretending to run away from the battle, when actually it was, Jarasandha, I've defeated you 17 times, I got better things to do. Somebody named Rukmini wants me to go marry her. So Krishna pretended to flee the battle. And that's exactly what happened. Krishna married Rukmini by kidnapping her on her wedding day. Jarasandha became the avowed enemy of Krishna when Krishna killed Kamsa. Kamsa had two wives, Asti and Prapti. And they were Jarasandha's daughters. Kamsa had no sons. So after the death of Kamsa, Asti and Prapti had no alternative but to return to father. So this made Jarasandha very hateful of the Yadu dynasty. So Krishna revealed who they were. And Jarasandha said to Krishna, I'm not going to fight you because you ran away from me. Conveniently forgetting that Krishna had already defeated him 17 times. So Jarasandha said, I'm not going to fight you, Krishna. And Arjuna, you're younger than me, but Bhima, I'll fight you. You're at my level. And they fought for 28 days. Finally, Krishna gave Bhima the clue how to kill Jarasandha by splitting him in two. Then the Rajasuya sacrifice was performed after the killing of Jarasandha. And at that Rajasuya sacrifice, there is the ceremony, Agra Pooj. Who should be the first VIP to be worshipped? And Yudhishthira's younger brother, Sahadev, stood up in front of the whole assembly and said, there are many great personalities here. Demigods, Brahmins, kings, princes. But in my opinion, the best of them all, Sri Krishna. And Sahadev spoke so nicely, enumerating the glories of Krishna. How many of you would have agreed with Sahadev that Krishna should be the first person worshipped? If you're not, then you're in the wrong hall. Jarasandha's hall is somewhere next door. So, there was somebody in the group who could not stand to hear Sahadev glorify Krishna like this. His ears were burning hearing. His name, Shishupal. Shishupal hated Krishna from his very birth. Shishupal had a habit, a very bad habit, called blaspheming, fault-finding, in particular, Krishna. The most grievous offense. Shishupal had an even greater hatred for Krishna because it was Shishupal who was supposed to marry Rukmini. And when Rukmini came out of the Durga temple on her marriage day, she looked like the original goddess of fortune. So splendid and beautiful. All the kings and princesses on their horses were so stunned by Rukmini's beauty, they fell off their horses. That's beauty. Her beauty was astounding. Shishupal was just about to marry Rukmini. Krishna came on his chariot, took Rukmini on his chariot. Bye-bye. She belongs to me. And Shishupal didn't even offer a fight. We call that person a chump. He's supposed to be some big kshatriya. He didn't even fight for his wife. And Jarasandha also didn't do anything. One of his buddies was there. Only Rukmini's brother, Rukmi, he chastised him. What kind of kshatriyas you are? You're letting my I'll go. I'll rescue my sister. But Rukmi was no match for Krishna. And Rukmi was going to be killed, but his sister saved him. She fell at Krishna's feet and begged him, no, no. Then Balaram came. After Balaram took care of all the soldiers who were fighting, Balaram then chastised Krishna. Krishna, what are you doing? He's now our brother-in-law. You can't kill him. Then Balaram spoke to Rukmini. Hey, Rukmini, you don't have the bodily concept of life. Why are you lamenting? Balaram acted as Adi Guru, giving instruction to both Krishna and Balaram, pacifying. So Rukmi was spared for the time being. But it was Balaram who ultimately later on killed Rukmi when he was too much. So at the Rajasuya sacrifice, when Shishupal stood up and objected, what? Krishna is going to be the first person? Shishupal said, there are many great kings here. There are great demigods, great sages. Any of them should be the first person worship, not Krishna. So as Shishupal was objecting and Shishupal was blaspheming, the kshatriyas who were on Krishna's side started to draw their swords. They were getting very angry. But Krishna could see, uh-oh, this sacrifice is going to turn into a big bloodbath. Krishna took out his Sudarshan Chakra and cut off the head of Shishupal. And when that happened, Shishupal's soul, Atma, like a meteor, entered into Krishna's body, and everybody saw. Whoa! Narada was sitting next to Yudhisthira. Yudhisthira inquired from Narada, what was this? What did I see? And so the seventh canto begins with a discussion between Narada and Yudhisthira. Who this Shishupal was. His two previous births, Ravan and Hiranyakashipu. And before that, Jai Vijay. So, Narada, in the seventh canto, talks about who Shishupal was in his first demon birth, has Hiranyakashipu, and the narration of Lord Nrsinga. So that's chapters 2 through 10. Then, in the next five chapters, because there's 15 chapters in the seventh canto. Chapters 11 through 15, after hearing Nrsinga Katha, Yudhisthira asks Narada about Varnashram. What is the duties of the four Varnas and Ashrams? Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Sudra, Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, and Sannyas. If you're a civilized human being, you fall into two of these eight categories. One of the four Varnas and one of the four Ashrams. Otherwise, you're not a civilized human being. So, Narada gave an analysis of all the different four Varnas and four Ashrams. Finally, in chapter 15, Narada explained civilized instructions for civilized human beings. So now we will let Narada Muni speak to us. If you're ready to hear from Narada Muni, say, Narada Muni Bhajayavina Radhika Ramana Name Bolo. Narada Muni continued, my dear king, who's the king? Yudhisthira. Some brahmanas are very much attached to fruitive activities. Some are attached to austerities and penances, and still others study the Vedic literature, whereas some, although very few, cultivate knowledge and practice different yogas, especially bhakti yoga. How many of you practice bhakti yoga? Yes, very good. A person desiring liberation for his forefathers or himself should give charity to a brahmana who adheres to impersonal monism, jnana-nishtha. In the absence of such an advanced brahmana, charity may be given to a brahman addicted to fruitive activities, karmakanda. During the period for offering oblations to the demigods, one should invite only two Brahmins, and while offering oblations to the forefathers, one may invite three Brahmanas. Or in either case, only one Brahmana will suffice. Even though one is very opulent, he should not endeavor to invite more Brahmins or make various expensive arrangements on those occasions. If one arranges to feed many Brahmins or relatives during the Shraddha ceremony, there will be discrepancies in the time, place, respectability and ingredients, the person to be worshipped, and the method of offering worship. At the end of this sacrifice, Nimai Charan will give the opinion of Shukracharya, who will also admit that when you do a sacrifice, there's bound to be discrepancies. But everything becomes faultless if you chant the holy name of God. So let's now chant, everyone. I don't hear the children. When one gets the opportunity of a suitable, auspicious time and place, one should, with love, offer food prepared with ghee. Ha, ha, ha. Let's hear that. He didn't say oil. One should offer with love food prepared with ghee to the deity of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that was also Prabhupada's standards in his temples. No oil, ghee. And then offer the prasad to a suitable person, a Vaishnava or a Brahmin. This will be the cause of everlasting prosperity. One should offer prasad to the demigods, the saintly persons, one's forefathers, the people in general, one's family members, one's relatives and one's friends, seeing them all as devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. A person fully aware of religious principles should never offer anything like meat, eggs, or fish in the Shraddha ceremony. And even if one is a Kshatriya, he himself should not eat such things. When suitable food prepared with ghee, again, ghee, is offered to saintly persons, the function is pleasing to the forefathers and the Supreme Lord, who are never pleased when animals are killed in the name of sacrifice. My wife, I've been married to her since 1980. She has never fed me food cooked in oil. My wife, since 1980, has only cooked with ghee and butter. That's why I look so handsome. Today, I went to Jamba Juice. Now I'm on a thing. Now I take wheatgrass every day. So I'm drinking wheatgrass. So the young girl, she was serving me. So I said, "How old do you think I look?" She said, "You look maybe 45. I said, "Next month is my birthday, I will be 61. She went, I said, "Yes." And then because I was dressed like this, so I said, "You see how I'm dressed? This is the secret to my youthful look. Krishna consciousness key. Persons who want to advance in superior religion are advised to give up all envy of other living entities, whether in relationship to the body, words, or mind. There is no religion superior to this. What a powerful statement. The second verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, Paramo Nimatsaranam Satam. Who can understand Bhagavatam? Those who are free from envy. Now I have a question. Where does envy begin? Who are we envious of? Where does it start? Yes, envy of God. That's the original sin. It's there in the Bible. Satan was originally an angel. Tomorrow is Easter, right? Satan, the devil, Lucifer, was actually the right-hand assistant of God. How did he become Satan? Envy. That is the original sin. Prabhupada also confirms that. Since a week ago, today is Saturday, right? For the last week, I have been studying this topic, original sin. It's envy. Begins with envy of God. So here, Narada is saying, there is no religion superior than giving up envy. So I'm asked all the time, Prabhu, how do I give up envy? Serve. If I'm envious of you, the way to become free from that envy is to serve you. That's why I sing that song. You gotta serve somebody. Because that is the key to success. And to become free from envy of God, we serve God. Beginning with chanting His holy name. Everybody. Narada is saying here, there is no religion superior to this. Because of an awakening of spiritual knowledge, those who are intelligent in regard to sacrifice, who are actually aware of religious principles, and who are free from material desires, control the self in the fire of spiritual knowledge, or knowledge of the absolute truth. They may give up the process of ritualistic ceremonies. Same thing Krishna says in chapter 4 of Bhagavad Gita. He uses that same analogy, the fire. Transcendental knowledge burns up all sinful reactions. Same thing Lord Chaitanya says, right? That this chanting of the Maha Mantra is the life and soul of all transcendental knowledge. And anyone who knows Kamlesh, he's real big on this. Kamlesh so many times preaches, you must get transcendental knowledge. So we get transcendental knowledge two ways. Actually, three ways. And I was reading also for the last week. I was reading all the Prabhupada quotes about studying his books. So, Prabhupada mentioned, yes, you get transcendental knowledge by reading the books. Four books. Gita, Bhagavatam, Nectar of Devotion, Teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But Prabhupada was writing in one letter, but reading books is not enough. You have to render service. Not that we just become scholars. You have to render service. So that service begins with your tongue. You chant, you taste prasad, and then you render service to Krishna and the devotees. Then your transcendental knowledge will fructify. Not just academic book knowledge. That's not sufficient. You have to render tangible service. And Lord Chaitanya says, this chanting of the Maha Mantra is the life and soul. And you've heard me preach so many times If you're nicely chanting, you'll want to study the books. And if you're actually reading the books, you'll want to chant. That's how you know that you're nicely chanting. Because that chanting will inspire you. Now let me study more nicely. And once you are nicely studying, then the desire comes, let me chant nicely. Everybody chant nicely one time, please. Upon seeing the person engaged in performing the sacrifice, animals meant to be sacrificed are extremely afraid, thinking, this merciless performer of sacrifices, being ignorant of the purpose of sacrifice, and being most satisfied by killing others, will surely kill us. Therefore, day by day, one who is actually aware of religious principles and is not heinously envious of pure animals should happily perform daily sacrifices, and for those certain occasions, with whatever food is available, easily by the grace of the Lord. In Lord Chaitanya's movement, there is no animal slaughter whatsoever. None. Lord Chaitanya's sacrifice is clean. You simply chant and worship the Lord. And we offer Krishna fruits, grains, milk, roots, vegetables, nuts, foods in the mode of goodness. Simple, clean, pure sacrifice. There are five branches of irreligion, appropriately known as irreligion, vidharma. Religious principles for which one is unfit, padadharma. Pretentious religion, abhas. And a logical religion, upadharma. And cheating religion, chala dharma. One who is aware of real religious life must abandon these five as irreligion. And that is also in the second verse of Bhagavatam. Paramo and then Kaitava dharma, Kaitava dharma, projita. Cheating religion is kicked out of Srimad Bhagavatam. That is the second statement. Cheating religion, Kaitava Dharma, is completely rejected by Srimad Bhagavatam. Therefore, Srimad Bhagavatam is the topmost religious book, because all kinds of cheating religions kicked out. Religious principles that obstruct one from following one's own religion are called vidharma. Religious principle introduced by others are called para dharma. A new type of religion created by one who is falsely proud and who opposes the principles of the Vedas is called upadharma. An interpretation by one's jugglery of words is called chala dharma. Lord Chaitanya dealt with this chala dharma when he defeated the Mayavadis, Sarvabhoma, and then Prakashananda Saraswati. Mayavad philosophy is chala dharma, word jugglery. Even their founder Acharya, Shankaracharya, admonished his followers on his deathbed, telling them, give up this word jugglery. Bhajagovindam, 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 mudama. He called his disciples mudamate. That's not a blessing. If your spiritual master calls you mudamate, that's not, he's not giving you ashirvad. Actually, he is. Just like my spiritual master, you heard me tell the story, several times told me, Papa Yonaya, Papa Yonaya. Yes. So, let's continue. a pretentious religious system manufactured by one who willfully neglects the prescribed duties of his order of life is called abas, a dim reflection or false similarity. But if one performs the prescribed duties for his particular ashram or varna, why are they not sufficient to mitigate all material distresses? Same thing Krishna says in chapter 18 of Bhagavad Gita. You'll see in chapter 18, Krishna summarizes, these are the symptoms of a Brahmin, 9 symptoms. Shamo dhamma tapaksoksham shantirajivam evacha gyanam vijnanam astikyam pramakarma swajabajam. Then symptoms of a kshatriya, symptoms of Vaishya, symptoms of a Sudra. But then Krishna said, now I'm going to explain how all of them can achieve perfection. Yes, even the Sudra can achieve perfection. How? Krishna says, by worship of the Supreme Lord, even the Sudra. And now I ask you, O assembly of great Brahmins and Vaishnavas, how do we worship Lord in this age of Kali? Chanting what? Tell me, show me. Very good. That is how you worship the Lord. You can continue as a Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Sudra, Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, and Sannyas, no problem. But you must worship the Lord by chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Even if a man is poor, he should not endeavor to improve his economic condition just to maintain his body and soul or to become a famous religionist. Just as a great python, although lying in one place, not endeavoring for its livelihood, gets the food it needs to maintain body and soul, one who is desireless also obtains his livelihood without endeavor. I am asked many times by devotees, Prabhu, how do I know whether or not I should take this new job? How do I know if I should stay in New Jersey or move to Irvine? How do I know how I should do this and do that? And I always say the same thing. Whatever decision you are making, is it going to decrease your hearing and chanting, or is it going to increase? So yes, come to Irvine. Be in the association of devotees and increase your hearing and chanting. We have with us Radha Krishna Das and his family. He is on the verge of joining our group. I would like you all to bless them, that all the obstacles are removed, because I've been predicting by next month they will be permanently part of our group. So let's all bless them, that Krishna removes all the obstacles. Everybody, come on, like you mean it. Jai. Then Sri Devi can be fully rejuvenated so that she can do gigabytes and terabytes of devotional service. Jai. Let us continue with Narada. One who is content and satisfied and who links his activities with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, residing in everyone's heart, enjoys transcendental happiness without endeavoring for his livelihood. Where is such happiness for a materialistic man who is impelled by lust and greed and who therefore wanders in all directions with a desire to accumulate wealth? Narada's instructions throughout Bhagavatam are consistent. You'll never see Narada encouraging anyone, oh yes, you should become like an ass and work hard. Narada in first canto, Narada in 4th canto, Narada in 7th canto, 10th canto, and 11th canto. Narada always preaches, you simply do the minimum in the material field, but you do the maximum on the spiritual side. And as Prabhupada so nicely stated, material well-being automatically follows spiritual well-being. So spiritual well-being should be your priority. Not this concept. Oh, Prabhu, I will do spiritual life when I get old. Now I want to get my material life in order. And when I get old, then I will do. But 99% of the time, that day never comes. The classic example, in Panama, I visited one shop, and there was this Indian man in his 70s, and he told me, he said, my wife has left me because I cannot give up drinking and chasing women. 70 years old. He told me, I like to go to the clubs and the bars and see the girls dancing. So I told him, when are you going to develop spiritual life? He said, well, when I get older, when I'm 90. I laughed in his face. Laugh. Such a fool. Such a fool when I'm 90. What will he tell me even if he lives to be 90? What's he going to tell me? Oh yeah, when I'm 100. Yamaraj doesn't wait. Let us continue. For a person who has suitable shoes on his feet, there is no danger even when he walks on pebbles and thorns. For him, everything is auspicious. Similarly, for one who is always self-satisfied, there is no distress. Indeed, he feels happiness everywhere. My dear King, a self-satisfied person can be happy even with only drinking water. I'm drinking lemon water supplied by Mina, and it is so satisfying. Very nice. Nimbopani, you call it, right? Yes. Best drink. I first had that in Vrindavan in 1975. The devotee said, oh, you should try Nimbopani. What? What is that? So they took me outside, and there is the stall. And my godbrother said, give him Nimbopani. So they gave me that clay cup, right? Ah, this is great. What is it? Lemon water. Lemon water? This is better than any soda. Better than any limca. Or what is that? Majjit? Or what is the other soda you get in? You get those sodas in India. Anything better than this? Coconut. Dab water. How many of you had that coconut dab? Best, right? In Bengal, Mayapur. Ah, that is the best drink. So hot, right? In Mayapur, then they cut the dab and they cut it and they put the straw. Jai. My dear King, a self-satisfied person can be happy even with only drinking water. Yes, Radha Krishna, you told me, Indradyumna Swami sometimes does water fast, right? How many days he does? Oh, he does a whole week. 30 days? That's why he's Indradyumna Maharaj. See, he's living proof. However, one who is driven by the senses, especially by the tongue and genitals, must accept the position of a household dog to satisfy his senses. I was thinking about this. There is a culture called the gangbanger culture. How do they address each other? Hey, dog. You know that? Am I right? Don't they address each other? Hey, dog. They know what they're going to be in their next life. They are self-realized. They know that in the next life they are becoming a dog. I even saw one time on MTV, there's this one gangbanger acharya, Snoop Dogg, right? But he got a book. You know who gave him a book? Gopika Mehta gave him a book. Did you know that? He took a book. He took one of Prabhupada's books. Very good. Anyway, in the video, he transforms into a dog. I said, he knows about reincarnation. He knows all about it. And they address each other. Yo, dog, what's happening, dog? Yes. But you're not going to become dog. You are going to become nice devotee of Krishna in your next life. All in favor, say Haribo. Jai. Very good. Because of greed for the sake of the senses, the spiritual strength, education, austerity, and reputation of a devotee or brahmana who is not self-satisfied dwindle, and his knowledge gradually vanishes. The strong bodily desires and needs of a person, disturbed by hunger and thirst, are certainly satisfied when he eats. Similarly, if one becomes very angry, that anger is satisfied by chastisement and its reaction. But as for greed, even if a greedy person has conquered all the directions of the world or has enjoyed everything in the world, still he will not be satisfied. Same thing Vamanadeva told Bali. When Vamanadeva requested Bali for 3 steps of land, Bali said, "You're not very intelligent. Why you only want 3 steps? I can give you your own planet. I own everything here." And what did Vamanadeva said? "No. If I'm not satisfied with 3 steps, I won't be satisfied even if I have everything." And that's exactly what happened. With 2 steps, he took everything away from Bali. And then Vamanadeva said, "You owe me my 3rd step. You're not going to be able to do it. Therefore, I have to punish you." But Bali said, "No, I still have my head. Put your 3rd step on my head." And Prabhupada said, that is how Bali purchased Lord Vamanadeva. So we should also follow in Bali's footsteps by offering our head. That's why we offer our full obeisances. We are bowing down, offering, "My Lord." And when you go to the temple, they put that, what's it called, padaka? What is that? That thing? Chatari, right? You go to LA temple. How many people have had that chatari? That's Krishna's feet on your head. Whenever that's being offered, take it. That's real ashirvad. Very good. They do that in San Diego too, on the Sunday feast. San Diego temple also does that. You put the Lord's feet on your head. O King Yudhishthira, many persons with varied experience, many legal advisors, many learned scholars, and many persons eligible to become presidents of learned assemblies fall down into hellish life because of not being satisfied with their positions. By making plans with determination, one should give up lusty desires for sense gratification. By giving up envy, one should conquer anger. By discussing the disadvantages of accumulating wealth, one should give up greed. And by discussing the truth, one should give up fear. By discussing spiritual knowledge, one can conquer lamentation and illusion. By serving a great devotee, one can become prideless. I said that at the beginning. So here it is confirmed by Narada. By keeping silent, one can avoid obstacles on the path of mystic yoga. Devotees, we are also silent. We're silent in 2 ways. A devotee practices Mona in this way. The devotee practices Mona by always chanting, by always preaching, by always describing Krishna. That is also Mauna. Now, if the devotee doesn't have opportunity to chant or talk about Krishna or preach, then the devotee practices complete silence. But if a devotee has an opportunity to chant or preach or talk about Krishna, he practices Mauna by engaging the tongue in talking about Krishna. So we also practice Mauna. And that's how we do it. And simply by stopping sense gratification, one can conquer envy. The four big sense gratification: meat eating, illicit sex, gambling, intoxication. Those are the four bigs. Then you have other ones, but at least give up those. By good behavior and freedom from envy, one should counteract sufferings due to other living entities. By meditation and trance, one should counteract sufferings due to providence. And by practicing hatha yoga, pranayama, and so forth, one should counteract sufferings due to the body and mind. Similarly, by developing the mode of goodness, especially in regard to eating, one should conquer sleep. So eating in the mode of goodness is explained in Bhagavad Gita and also thoroughly in Srimad Bhagavatam. Generally, vegetarian food offered to Krishna called prasad. Vegetables, fruits, grains, legumes, milk products. Now the question comes, Prabhu, what about onions and garlic? That's not the mode of goodness. Onions, garlic, mushrooms, these are in passion and ignorance. They will not help you in your spiritual life. They'll help you in your material life, but not in your spiritual life. You want to become in the mode of goodness. Onions, garlic, mushrooms disturb the airs in the body. They don't make you peaceful. They agitate. Therefore, mode of goodness means calm, peacefulness, mellow. One must conquer the mode of passion and ignorance by developing the mode of goodness. And then one must become detached from the mode of goodness by promoting oneself to the platform of Shuddha Sattva. Shuddha Sattva is what we are trying to do in Krishna consciousness. When you give up meat eating, illicit sex, intoxication, and gambling, pretty much you're in the mode of goodness. Now on top of that, add the chanting of Maha Mantra. Now you're in Shuddha Sattva. Now you're in Krishna consciousness. Lord Shiva told his wife Sati, I am always in this Shuddha Sattva stage. Yes, Lord Shiva told his wife, I am always in this Krishna consciousness. It's in the fourth canto, in the discussion, the narration of Daksha. Lord Shiva told his wife, I am always in Vasudev consciousness, Krishna consciousness. All this can automatically be done if one engages in the service of the spiritual master with faith and devotion. That is the essence of ISKCON. Listen to that. All this can automatically be done. In other words, conquer passion and ignorance and be promoted to the platform of Shuddha Sattva. That means transcendental or purified goodness, by if one engages in the service of the spiritual master with faith and devotion. That is what ISKCON is promulgating. Serve the pure devotees. Very simple. In this way, one can conquer the influence of the modes of nature. The spiritual master should be considered to be directly the Supreme Lord, because he gives transcendental knowledge for enlightenment. We sing every day, Sakshad Haritve Nasa Masta Shastra. We sing that every day. Consequently, For one who maintains the material conception that the spiritual master is an ordinary human being, everything is frustrated. His enlightenment and his Vedic studies and knowledge are like the bathing of an elephant. Based on this, in the last week, I've been reconfirming in my heart that yes, I must strictly follow the instructions of Srila Prabhupada. This concept that thinking that the spiritual master is an ordinary human being, this is one of the offenses in the chanting of the holy name. So I must kick out any conception like that. The spiritual master says here now, it says here, consequently, for one who maintains the material conception that the spiritual master is an ordinary being, everything is frustrating. His enlightenment and his Vedic studies and knowledge are like the bathing of an elephant. We've heard this before. Parikshit used this. The elephant goes to take a bath, nicely washes. As soon as it comes out of the river, immediately throws dust on its body. That's the bathing of an elephant. So we should not be like that. We should get clean and remain clean. Not clean and then immediately get dirty, commit sin again. No, get clean. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna, is the master of all living entities and of the material nature. His lotus feet are sought and worshipped by great saintly persons like Vyas. Nonetheless, there are fools who consider Lord Krishna an ordinary human being. Very good. Wow. That's very intelligent of you. You are truly 15 years old. If it works, I don't know if it's plugged in. I don't think it's plugged in. What does she need? Okay, there should be a bell on the plate. Okay. Nonetheless, there are fools who consider Lord Krishna an ordinary human being. Krishna says that in Bhagavad Gita. Avajananti mang mudha manushim tamashritam. Fools deride me when I descend in the human form. They do not understand my superior position. Narada continues, ritualistic ceremonies, regulative principles, austerities, and the practice of yoga are all meant to control the senses and mind. But even after one is able to control the senses of mind, if he does not come to the point of meditation upon the Supreme Lord, all such activities are simply labor in frustration. As professional activities or business profits cannot help one in spiritual advancement, but are a source of material entanglement, the Vedic ritualistic ceremonies cannot help anyone who is not a devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One who desires to conquer the mind must leave the company of his family and live in a solitary place, free from contaminated association. To maintain the body and soul together, he should beg as much as he needs for the bare necessities of life. My dear King, in a sacred and holy place of pilgrimage, one should select a place in which to perform yoga. The place must be level and not too high or low. Does that sound familiar? Radha Krishna, where is that also stated? In the Bhagavad Gita by Krishna in chapter 6. There one should sit very comfortably, being steady and equipoised, keeping his body straight, and thus begin chanting the Vedic pranava. What is pranava? Everybody say. Everyone do om and hold it as long as you can. You're better than me. Very good. Excellent. While continuously staring at the tip of the nose, a learned yogi practices the breathing exercises through the technical means known as Puraka, Kumbhaka, and Rechika, controlling inhalation and exhalation, and then stopping them both. In this way, the yogi restricts his mind from material attachments and gives up all material desires. As soon as the mind, being defeated by lusty desires, drifts toward feelings of sense gratification, the yogi should immediately bring it back and arrest it within the core of his heart. Same thing Krishna says in chapter 6 of Bhagavad Gita. This proves that Narada is bona fide representative of Krishna. He's not contradicting anything Krishna has said. Exactly what Krishna says in 6th chapter of Gita, he is also saying the same. That makes him bona fide spiritual master. When the yogi regularly practices in this way, in a short time, his heart becomes fixed and freed from disturbance, like a fire without flames or smoke. When one's consciousness is uncontaminated by material lusty desires, it becomes calm and peaceful in all activities, for one is situated in eternal blissful life. One situated on that platform, one does not return to materialistic activities. Same thing, chapter 6, when Krishna talks about the perfection of yoga. One thinks there is nothing greater to be gained, and having achieved this, he does not come down. So, Meena, we are about halfway through the chapter. It is now 7:15. It will take too much time to finish the chapter, and you still want to have some bhajans, correct? So I think we should stop here with my kathah and do bhajans. All in favor, say Hari Bol. Because I don't want to be the one that goes on for 8 hours. So, who is our first chanter?